We're going to continue now with our special series on self-help. Next up, Conquering Challenges. It's called Stepping Stones to Success. Scott Schwerman joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Scott Schwerman with us, neuroperformanceologist. We're going to talk about what that is. Scott is a nationally known speaker, coach, author. He has spent more than 20 years learning success technologies. He's used what he has learned, created to transform his own life. He lost 180 pounds and maintained it while rediscovering his own vitality. Scott's techniques are being used to increase sales in business, weight management, overcoming obstacles as well. Now, he's a co-author of Stepping Stones to Success with Jack Canfield. He's the chicken soup folk. Deepak Chopra, of course, he's been on our program a lot. Dr. Dennis Waitley as well. Scott's next book, Neuroperformanceology, Transforming Your Life in 30 Minutes a Day. That's a tongue twister, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
Excited to be here.
What is neuroperformanceology?
Neuroperformanceology is the ability to reach inside of yourself into the very recesses of your subconscious mind and pull out all the amazing qualities and skills and resources you have and begin to use them in all the areas of your life to create the life that you really want, the life of your dreams.
If you dropped 180 pounds, how much did you weigh?
Well, at my peak, I'm a real tall guy. I'm about 5'6". On a good day, I'll tell you I'm 5'7". I weighed 360 pounds. I had a 56-inch waist, so I wasn't so much taller than I was round.
Were you born a little heavier?
I was always the fat kid. I grew up the fat kid, yes.
And you just accumulated the weight. I guess it just comes on, doesn't it?
Well, you know, what happens is, you know, you're a little chubby as a kid, and, you know, other kids are honest, and they start to say things about you. And then I started to withdraw from the world. I spent my life consumed by TV and the refrigerator. And the more I was teased, the more I withdrew, and the bigger and heavier I got. And then the cycle just kind of perpetuated itself.
Did you eat a lot because you were hungry, or was it something else?
Well, you know, as a kid, being teased and bullied and made fun of hurt.
Sure.
And we'd find solace in front of the TV set and eating. I'd find comfort and safety and security. So I started to associate love and safety and security and those things with eating. So it became not a hunger for food, but a hunger to be loved and to be cared for and to find some kind of comfort.
Did you have any health issues along the way because of that?
Did I have health issues? I mean, yeah. I mean, to walk up a flight of stairs and feel like you just ran a marathon is awful. Or your knees hurt from walking 3 or 4 blocks. It's a horrible thing. And if I would have continued that path, I'm 52 years old now. I don't know. I'd probably be a type 2 diabetic. Maybe I would have had a major heart attack already or a stroke.
Yeah. What was your epiphany? I mean, what happened to make you change all that?
Well, you know, out of my frustration, I started studying how my mind worked. You know, why was I having this internal battle? I would lose weight. I could lose a lot of weight. I could lose 50 or 100 pounds, but yet I'd always seem to put it back on, and I always would put on more than what I started with. And I finally reached the point where I just couldn't live in this world anymore. I had to make a decision. At my low point, my epiphany, I decided to make the decision that I didn't want to live anymore. And I remember taking an overdose of sleeping pills and painkillers trying to end my life because that's how painful life was. And I remember passing out, and I actually woke up the next, I had to be morning, and I opened my eyes, and I felt this sense of clarity. And when I felt this sense of clarity, first I thought I had died. It was the most peaceful moment in my life.
Yeah.
And then I realized I was alive, and then I realized if I survived this, that I had to be here for a reason. And then in that epiphany, I realized that, you know what, I was responsible. I used to blame everybody else for everything. I used to blame everybody else for feeling miserable. You know, why wouldn't they accept me for who I was? And I used to blame everybody else except for myself. I didn't take responsibility for what I was. And in that moment, I got clarity, and I said, okay, I'm responsible for myself. Everything that's happened in my past, I'm responsible for today. I'm responsible for what happens tomorrow. And then I started out on this journey to change and explore how I think. And I realized that the image in my head, after all these years of being reinforced, is that really being heavy was a good thing. As silly as that sounds, you know, I associated love and comfort with food. And I had to change it. I had to change that image. And once I changed that image, then my life started to change.
Once you changed, then how did you basically get in as a motivational, well-known speaker? How did that happen for you?
Always as a kid, I had this little voice in my head saying to me, you know, you need to help people. You need to make a difference in this world. This is who you are and what you are. And as I got heavier and withdrew more from the world, I kind of lost that little voice in my head.
Yeah.
And then as I started becoming thinner and healthier, the little voice started coming back, and it wasn't subtle. It was yelling and screaming at me. And you know, I'm a big believer in listening to my instincts and my intuition, and I teach that to my clients. So I needed to go with that. And I chucked my real estate career, and I said, this is what I'm going to do.
And you love it.
I love what I do. I mean, I get up every day and get to do great things. I get to talk to people like you. I see some, you know, it's funny. My clients, they'll get a lot from working with me, but I think I get as much from them as they get from me. I just see them do some incredible things that no one ever thought would be possible to accomplish.
Scott, over what period did you lose the 180 pounds? And, you know, what did you do to lose the weight?
Okay. Those are the questions I always get the three questions. How much did you lose? How long did it take? And how do you know you're going to stay that way? It's been somewhere between 8 and 9 years. And the reason I say sometime between that period of time is, you know, we have to get away from the shift in weight. You know, we focus on diet and exercise, and they are very important tools.
Yeah.
But the reality is the key is the image and the vision you have of yourself. In the past, I could tell you the day I started a diet and the day, and I'll use the quote-unquote diet, and the day it ended. And a lot of times they're on the same day. When I made a fundamental shift in how I thought, how, you know, I had this image, you know, when I really explored my mind, I had this image of myself, and it showed really that I was supposed to be heavy and that heavy was a good thing. And if heavy is a good thing, that means going on a diet is a bad thing. And then I was actually in conflict with what I believed to be right and wrong, even though that sounds kind of ludicrous. So I changed the image in my mind, and I constructed this image of myself that I'm strong, healthy, lean, attractive, youthful body, weighing 175 pounds or less. And once my mind accepted that, which, by the way, your subconscious mind will accept an image. It doesn't distinguish between what's real or not real. It'll accept whatever you give it with mm-hmm. purpose and conviction. All of a sudden, now I became different, is that if my mind said to me, the same process that kept me heavy, now that said, wait a minute, you're 175 pounds, but your body sure don't look like 175 pounds. So you need to start thinking like a person that weighs 175 pounds. You need to start acting, eating, moving, and becoming a person that weighs 175 pounds. So there was a fundamental shift. And then the things like eating better foods, exercising more, made logical sense to me. It was a natural process.
When did you start feeling better?
Well, the moment I changed the image in my mind, I started to feel better. I mean, obviously, physically, I still had issues.
Yeah, yeah.
But I felt better about who I was and what I was because, one, I was responsible. Two, I knew that I was the master of my life. And three, that I knew if I kept on my path now that I would get to weigh 175 pounds. Actually, yesterday, I weighed 174 pounds. So I knew I would get there.
And you have to get all new clothes again, Scott.
Many times. Yeah, many times.
Do you keep any of the 300 plus pound clothes just to look at?
No. I have some photos of myself, but no, because that's not me. That's not me anymore. That's who I used to be. No, I don't have a need to keep any of those things. I don't have anything.
Did your family see this metamorphosis?
Oh, sure. It was just more than just a metamorphosis physically, just how I reacted to the world and how I carried myself and how I acted.
They must have been in shock.
Yeah, I think they were in shock. You know, people, like I'll tell people now, they'll see me what I look like now, and they can't ever believe that I weighed 360 pounds, and I have to show them a photograph. But In fact, if I show you a photograph of what I used to look like, you would never think they were the same people.
You'd be in those Weight Watcher commercials.
Right. You know? What's funny is I'll do a talk, and I'll talk about a client I had, and I'll hold a picture of myself up when I weighed 360, and I'll tell them the story about this client I had, and they have no idea that I'm talking about myself.
That's great. That is great. What are people looking for, Scott? You know, you went through this entire effort not only to lose the weight, but to change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
What are people looking for nowadays? What do they want?
Well, I think people want happiness is what they want. You know, people, I work with all kinds of people, from athletes to individuals overcoming huge physical obstacles and challenges like cancer, and business people, some very highly successful business executives, to salespeople struggling to get past a certain income level. And ultimately, they're all looking for the same thing. They're looking to be happy.
Yeah. And money doesn't necessarily make you happy, does it?
Well, people come to me and they'll say things to me, well, once I lose 100 pounds, I'll be happy. Once I make $1 million, I'll be happy. And the reality is that's a wrong process. The process is I have to think I'm that way, I have to act that way, and be happy with myself that way, and then the other things fall into place. It's not once I get this, I'll be happy. It's once I decide I'm happy, I will get those things that I want.
I know it's a better approach. It's a positive approach as opposed to the other one's kind of negative, I think.
Well, it is. And, you know, it makes sense. If you want to be successful in business and you want to have $1 million income, it's not going to come to you and you're going to be happy. You're going to adopt the philosophy, study somebody and model somebody who's highly successful and act that way and conduct your life that way. And then it makes logical sense that you're going to have and obtain those things.
Do you paint the picture of what you want? Do you etch it in your head?
Yes. What I do is I help people create vision. You know, it all starts with a vision. If you don't have a vision of what you want, you're not going to get it. You got to be able to see a clear picture in your mind. Your subconscious mind is such an incredibly powerful tool. It doesn't distinguish between the past, present, and the future. It doesn't distinguish between what's true and not true. What it does accept is whatever you tell it with purpose and conviction, it'll accept as the truth. And then what it'll do is it'll use all of its forces and energy, and it's designed that way to accomplish something to make that happen. It'll work for you 24 hours
That's
a day,
right.
7 days a week, even when you're asleep, moving you and driving you, changing your awarenesses, your values, your beliefs, everything to make you to make that thing a reality.
You're one of the few people, Scott, to echo exactly what I've said about the subconscious mind. I mean, I used to do it all the time, where I would do it primarily right before I went to bed, because I knew it would go to work for me while I was sleeping.
It's interesting that you say that. I'm a big fan of the book Think and Grow Rich, and if anybody's not familiar with it, it was a book written in the 1920s by a man named Napoleon Hill, who spent 20 years of his life studying 500 of the most successful people that really built this country, people like Henry Ford and Thomas Edison,
yeah,
and the Wright brothers and Alexander Graham Bell. And he, through his 20-year study, he found that all these people had 17 specific things they all did, even if they weren't aware they were doing it. Well, what you just mentioned was one of them, is each of them would have what he would say a vision or a chief aim or a definite major purpose in life. And what would happen was the single most important time is what they did is every night before they went to bed, while they were in bed, getting ready to starting to fall asleep, they would focus all their attention on what their vision was. And it's a very powerful tool. You got to have a clear, sharp vision of what you want. I read a lot of biographies, from anything from athletes to religious leaders to world leaders to business people. If you look at all of the most highly successful people in whatever they do, there's always a common theme. They'll tell you they had a vision of what they wanted. They had a very sharp, clear picture of what they were going to accomplish, and people would tell them they were crazy and nuts. Here, I use the example. Look at the Wright brothers. You had two brothers who had a bicycle shop, and they said, you know, we have this idea. We're going to make this machine that flies in the air, this motorized, and we're going to put a person in it. And it had never been done, and people thought they were out of their minds, but they didn't. And if they would have listened to everybody else, we would not be flying in airplanes right now. But they had a clear vision. They focused all of their conscious attention, or actually Napoleon Hill talked about focusing all your conscious attention on it, turning it over to your subconscious mind, and then turning it over to the infinite intelligence,
yes,
of the universe.
I mean, what better thing could go to work for you while you're sleeping?
It's going to go to work for you anyway, sometimes in not such a positive way. So if you, it's looking for direction. It's gonna work all night long anyway.
Yeah.
So have it do something good for you as opposed to bad for you. I always describe the subconscious mind as an all-powerful king. It'll make reality whatever you tell it with purpose and conviction. However, it does have the mentality of a two-year-old. It'll take whatever you tell it literally, good, bad, or indifferent. And if you tell it bad things, it'll rationalize why you should do those bad things. That's how we have things like obesity and people that are addicted to drugs and alcohol. If you talk to them on a conscious level, they will tell you that what they're doing is wrong. They know it's wrong. But at any time they're in a situation, when they do it, they can rationalize why they do it.
You know, Scott, it's amazing that you've pinpointed these things. It really is, I think, one of the ways that people are successful. And your book is called Stepping Stones to Success.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I always talk about, with my clients, everything we do is going to be simple and easy, because I think that's how everything needs to be. And, you know, I'll say to people is, you know, really the minor adjustments and changes you need to make to be successful are usually so simple and basic that the average person will see them as being totally ridiculous, and then they'll never do them.
Not at all. So let's talk a little bit about the stepping stones to success and the tips for people. Do you find of yourself now that successful people will do these things, but they'll be ready for the event when it occurs? Case in point, what's the use of, you know, letting your subconscious mind do everything if you're not prepared?
So I agree with that.
You want to be the best teacher, but if you're not prepared to be a teacher, it's going to be a disaster.
I agree with you. A couple things. Well, one of the things I notice is highly successful people are much more open to making adjustments and changes. I work with a lot of athletes. And here's what I notice. When I work with an athlete who's at the top of their field of their game, and I always ask them the question, what do you do really well? And they'll always give me a very short list. And then I'll ask them, what do you need to improve on? And they'll give me a list a mile long. And they're usually little things they know that they can tweak, little tiny things in their game. They will be that much better and that much more productive. Now, what's interesting is when I talk to an average athlete, I'll ask them, what do you do really well? And they'll give me a list a mile long. And I go, what do you need to work on? And I usually get a very short list. Sometimes I get no list. So I find that interesting.
Yeah.
So I think that highly successful people, regardless of whatever you define as success, whether it's business, leadership, whatever it is, sports, are very in tune. One, they're very open to change. And two, they're open to new ideas and new thoughts and new values and beliefs. And that's what makes them successful. And if they have the mindset of success, then they start taking the steps to do the things to be successful on a conscious level.
And what would your definition of success be?
My definition of success, I think success is a mindset. You know, you can see people, you can see somebody who digs a ditch and they're very happy and they're ecstatic and they're thankful for the work they have. They're very successful.
And they're good at what they do.
Yes. And then there's people I meet that are highly, by outward standards, are very highly successful. They're making more money than they know what to do with. And their lives are terrible. They're miserable.
On my, I live between L.A. and St. Louis, and on my last trip to St. Louis, everything was going wrong with the house. We had some rough weather. Part of a tree fell on my house. I needed to get plumbers in, electricians in, carpenters in for various things that had just gone wrong with an old house. And it was amazing, Scott, how these craftsmen were all phenomenal at what they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, the plumber, you know, the electrician, the carpenter, they were all pros at what they did. And, you know, I think that's so important to do, don't you?
I think it's important to take pride and be the best that you can be in whatever you do.
We're going to come back, Scott, and talk more about stepping stones to success. We'll have you list them for us, and then later on we'll take some calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Scott Schmarin as we talk about his work, Stepping Stones to Success, trying to help you. Scott, I noticed that you've got some pretty heavyweight co-authors here with you with the book. Jack Canfield from the Chicken Soup Craze, Deepak Chopra, Dr. Dennis Whately. Why so many people? Tell me.
Well, I mean, the book is a compilation of people and their stories that are inspiring. And you know, the whole purpose of a book like Stepping Stones is to let people know that, you know what, I'm really no different than you, that you and I are the same, and that if I can do what I did, then you can do whatever you choose to do, and that it's in within your reach and your capability. I know when I talk to groups of people and I'm speaking, I want them to know that, you know, I tell my story at the beginning, and they go, oh, wow, that's amazing, but I'm no different than you. You and I are the same. So if I can do this, you could do this. I mean, I have clients that have done some really miraculous things that I thought the world would think is impossible, but somewhere in their mind they thought that they could do it.
How many people out there, in not terms of numbers, but percentages, do you think, are simply lost?
I would say probably more than 90% of our population.
That's huge.
I think that people go through life just accepting what happens to them. You know, they hear what they hear on TV or they read on the internet, they assume is true, and they just accept it as the truth. And the reality is perception is your perception. That's the truth. So you can change that perception. You know, you don't have to accept what's given to you. And the thing is, they are given to you. It doesn't mean it has to be you. Is to do what you want. I mean, what inspires you? What moves you? And then go pursue it.
Does it take long? Is it difficult to develop these steps to get yourself out of this rut that people are in?
Is it difficult for people to get out of the rut? Well, it depends on the person. Some people come to me and they jump in and they embrace everything. And then I get people to come in and then they come, they want to change, but then they fight everything that they're doing along the way. And that's their old programming in their mind saying, you know, we don't really want to do this. So we're going to give you rational reasons why you shouldn't. They stop doing what they're supposed to be doing. So it depends on the person. I mean, you know, I've had some clients just jump in and say, hey, I'm going to do this. And they have incredible results.
What's the breaking point for most people, Scott, where they get to a point where they say, I've got to change my life?
I think it's different for everybody. I think some people have to reach the bottom. And then some people don't. They just say, you know what, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm not going to accept the way my life is anymore. I want more than what I have. Some of them just have big goals. I mean,
nothing wrong with that.
I mean, when I say they have a big goal, they want to do something that's never been done before. And they're determined to get it done. And so they're just looking for ways to help themselves get there. You know, it seems like when you decide to do something, and you empower yourself to do something, the right people come along to help you get there. You just seem to be attracted to them. You become more receptive to being open to people like that. And the right teachers and mentors come along to make it happen.
You know, I think that people, if they set goals and they're positive about those goals, they'll happen. I bet Barack Obama, before he was president, said to himself, I'm going to be president one day of the United States. And not arguing the merits of whether he's done a good job or not. But the point is, I bet he concentrated on it, and it happened for him. Had he thought negatively, oh, it's not going to work, I'm not going to be the president, it can't happen, it probably wouldn't have happened.
Well, for most people, that does happen, though. What happens is maybe they do have a goal. They say, well, you know, I want to be successful. I want to lose 50 pounds. The problem they have is they have a belief system that says, no, you're not going to do that. And when I work with a client, the first thing we always work on is clearing out all the old obstacles and challenges they faced, you know, the things that get in the way. And what happens is when we start to explore those things, a lot of those things come from when they were a kid. They grew up in an environment that was negative. I work with a lot of salespeople and business people. And what happens many times is they come to me for one of two reasons. They're at a certain income level and they can't get over that. They just get stuck. Or they have these huge monumental rises, and then they crash. Then they have a huge monumental rise again, and they crash, and they run that pattern. And almost all of the situations, when we start to explore it a little bit, is they have very, very negative connotations to success and money. Because they grew up in a household where maybe they didn't have much, and their family's way of rationalizing it was saying, well, you know, people that make a lot of money are dishonest, and you got to cheat people to make a lot of money. And that's what they heard all their life. So somewhere in their mind, they believe that to be true. So what happens? They have success, whatever that definition is to them, at an income level in their mind. And they reach that income level, it means, oh, I'm making a lot of money. And a little voice kicks in, and it says, What are you doing? You're a nice person. Only dishonest people make a lot of money, so you better stop doing this. However, it doesn't speak to you that way because you would dismiss that if it said it that way. It says to you, you know, you've been working really hard. You need to take some time off and relax. You're going to have a heart attack or a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And it convinces you that what you're doing is not right. And then you crash. And then you get to a point where you're so low, they say, whoa, 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 that's not me either. And so you have this thermometer that's set at the wrong temperature. And if it gets too high, it cools you down. You get too cool, it heats you back up. And you gotta get rid of those things before you can change anything, because they're always going to get in the way otherwise.
Tell me of these stepping stones to success, Scott. Let's go through them.
Well, in the book is a chronology of my life and my story. The book I'm writing now, which is Neuroperformanceology, Transforming Your Life in 30 Minutes a Day, we go over specific things. And, you know, the single most important thing a person can do to change themselves is they got to have a vision of what they want. You know, a person walking around with no vision is like a boat with no rudder on the back of it. Wherever the wind blows, it's where it's going to go.
Exactly.
You got to have a vision, and then you got to become obsessed with it. You know, you need to be writing it down on paper, big time. And writing it down in our own handwriting is very powerful. We live in a world now where we type and speak. But the reality is, and neuroscience supports this now, is that we believe that what we write to be true. It doesn't matter whether it is or it isn't. When we're writing in our own handwriting, we believe the things that we write to be true. And it's a very powerful tool. So you should be writing out that your vision is real, that it's actually already happened in the present tense. And the reason I think writing is such a powerful tool, if you really think about it, you're engaging the three major modalities: hearing, seeing, and feeling. You're holding a pen in your hand. You can feel yourself writing the words out. You're engaging your feeling modality. You're watching yourself write these words. So you're engaging seeing. And then you're also engaging the auditory part of it, hearing, because as you're writing it, you're saying these words to yourself. Some people say them out loud when they're writing. You know, sometimes people speak to themselves out loud when they're writing. So you're engaging all the major communication modalities, and it's very powerful. I write out my vision and my goals every day. In fact, it's early in the morning in Chicago right now. And what is it, 2:45 in the morning, I got up 45 minutes before we got on this call, and I wrote out a page of my values and my beliefs, my goals, my dreams, and my visions.
Are these like affirmations?
They are affirmations. I write out my affirmations as far as my values, my beliefs, my goals, and I write them in the present tense. Like, the two most important words in the English language are I am, because whatever you write after those words, you define yourself. So I'm great, I'm amazing, I'm successful, I'm stupid, I'm dumb. It all depends on how you define yourself. But what you state after those two simple words, three letters, defines you and who you are and what you are.
There is something out there in the universe, Scott, I'm convinced, that helps you make this happen. Somehow you connect with it, and it works. Here's the question, though. What is it?
Einstein always said that everything in the universe is energy. Our thoughts are energy. Our bodies are made of energy. The clothes we're wearing, the chair you're sitting in right now, is energy. And it's basic molecular structure. It's really all the same. And so, you know, the saying goes is what you put out there is what you get. I mean, if you think about it, you can only be aware of so many things. There's millions of things. There's millions of bits of information coming into your mind every second of every day, but you can very process a fractional percentage of that, maybe 1,000, consciously every minute. So millions a second, 1,000 a minute, the numbers don't work good, so you have to delete almost all of it. So if you start to become aware of the things that are important to you, that could be good or bad, okay? If you're a negative person and you're focused on negative, what are you aware of? What's your conscious awareness? You're aware of bad things that can happen to you. You're aware of things that can help you. You're aware of things that can hurt you. If I am focused on, I have this big, giant vision, and now all of a sudden we have this little device in our head that says, oh, that looks like it could help you. That looks like that could help you. That doesn't help you. We don't have to worry about that. We're not aware of that. And actually, science has a name for it. It's called the reticular activating system in your mind. And the best way to describe it is, do you ever buy a brand-new car, and you drive the car off the dealer's lot, and all of a sudden, you notice all these incredibly amazing, brilliant people that bought the same car you bought.
That's right. How does that happen?
Well, the reality is those cars were there yesterday.
They were always there.
they weren't part of your awareness. Now that it's part of your awareness, they come out of the background.
That's right.
And it's the same thing. I could run you through the same day of your life twice. First time, you get out of bed in the morning, the sun is shining, you wake up with a great attitude, you had a great dream, and everything is happy and joyful. And at the end of the day, I have you write a synopsis of the day. Now I run you through the same exact day again. You wake up, you got a headache, you're cranky, maybe you had a fight with your spouse, and you run through your day, and I have you write another synopsis of the day. Both days were identical. If I read the two synopses, they look like totally different days.
That's
because
right.
What you were focused on and what you're aware of were totally different.
Do we create our own environment?
I think we attract our own environment, and sometimes, yes, we do. I mean, let's face it, sometimes you're born into a horrible environment. As a child, you have no control over that. You do have control of your thoughts, especially as you get older. We can grow up in an environment that's very negative, and we carry some of these negative things to adulthood. But once we become awake and aware of our thoughts and our feelings, we now have control, and we have the ability to make a decision whether we're going to stay on this path or begin to move down a different path. Becoming awake and aware of your thoughts is powerful. It gives you control.
Have you, when you've done this, have there been moments that even you get frustrated because it's not moving fast enough?
I still have moments that I'm frustrated. I'm a human being. That's to say that I get out every day, everything is rosy, it would be ludicrous.
Right.
However, I have my morning routine that I follow, and even when I have a really not so good day, it's that much better than if I didn't follow my daily routine.
The routine's important, isn't it?
Well, one of the things I do with my clients is to help them create a powerful vision of what they want, and then a daily routine to support that. Here's how I describe it. It'd be great if you go to the gym one time, work out one time, and have the perfect body. Wouldn't that be great?
It's not a real world.
Okay. So why would you think that you could work on one thing on your mind one time and expect miraculous things to happen? It doesn't work that way.
No.
For some people, things like that happen. I've had clients have monumental changes in an instant. But the reality is creating a daily routine. The negative habits we've developed happen over repetition over a long period of time. Your subconscious mind hears something long enough, and it says, oh, I guess it must be true. And then it accepts it as the truth, and then it becomes part of you. So if you weren't changing something, repetition really is the mother of all success. We can make changes in a highly emotionally charged state, which is how when I work with a client and we actually go into their subconscious mind, I can help them create a very vivid, bold picture of their vision, and they can start that shift right away. Now you need something to support it and reinforce it every day. You gotta do something to train your mind. One of the things I try to teach people, if you spend 30 minutes a day just on you, writing out your affirmations, creating a powerful visualization, maybe doing some other things. 30 minutes a day, if you did that every day, would be 186 and a half hours a year working on you.
30 minutes a day?
Yeah, 30 minutes a day. What is it, 186 and a half hours, okay?
Oh, no, it's more than that. For the year?
Yeah, if you did it for a year, if you did it 30 minutes a day.
That's almost like 1,000 hours.
No, if you did it to 30 minutes, half hour a day.
30 minutes a day, it would be...
180, it's under 186 and a half, 186 and a half hours, excuse me.
It's 3 hours a week, right?
Right. It's about 100. It's about 186 hours. It's 365 divided by half.
Oh, all right.
Okay. That would be if that would be four and a half weeks working 40 hours a week just on you. So if I sent you away for that period of time, if I sent you away for 4.5 weeks and you worked 40 hours a week just on making yourself better, you would come back a different person. And you can accomplish that by working on yourself a half an hour a day.
You should. Absolutely. And you find yourself that if you're not doing it or if you skip, you feel it, don't you?
Yeah, I don't skip. I haven't missed a day in years.
Good for you.
So it's part of who I am. I tell people, I have my morning routine, and I go to the gym 6 days a week now. And I go, well, don't you have days you don't feel like going? I go, absolutely. However, if I look at it, I tell people, I look at it as my medicine. It's my medication for life. you know, if I was a type 1 diabetic and I had to take insulin every day, I wouldn't decide one day I don't feel like doing it.
Exactly.
I would still do it anyway.
Don't you find, though, Scott, if there's something that might interfere with the routine or something, you have to go to a meeting or something, doesn't that screw you up for the day?
No. I'll tell you why. I do a lot of traveling. I'm in New York at least once a month for several days. And you have to have expectations. Like I have a very hard workout routine I have when I'm here. Now, for me to have that same expectation when I go to New York, knowing that the facility I'm staying at, the hotel I'm staying at, and what's around there, for me to go there and have that same expectation is unrealistic. And if I have that expectation when I go there, I'm disappointed. However, I've adapted my routine, and when I go on the road, I have a routine I follow as far as for exercise. My morning routine stays the same. So I go there with the expectation I'm going to follow this routine, and then I satisfy my expectations. If I have expectations to go someplace and they're not realistic for the environment that I am in, I'm setting myself up for defeat.
But whatever the expectations are, you'll do them, and you'll feel satisfied doing it.
Right. And that works for me, you know, to go there and get frustrated and I don't have control of that environment, it makes no sense to me. So I adapt what I do. It's still hard, but it's not the same. It's different.
This vision you talked about where people need to do that first, how elaborate should the vision be?
Well, I think the vision should be very elaborate. It has to be real. You know, I'll give you a story. I have a client I work with. She's a female bodybuilder, and she was a top-level amateur female bodybuilder. And she came to me last year. She goes, I have this vision. I want to win a national championship. I want to be a top-level pro. And in our conversations we had, and we always have pretty in-depth conversations. I need to extract out of those conversations what they need to change.
Mm-hmm.
She never had a clear picture of what that looked like, and also she trains other fitness competitors and bodybuilders and what it would mean to her business as a trainer. So I helped her create this very clear, sharp vision of what it would look like to win on stage and everything. The cameras are flashing, and it's a highly emotionally charged state. When you see tears running down somebody's cheeks while they're having a vision in their mind, that's powerful.
Oh, my gosh. Is that what happened to her?
Yeah. So yes. And so what happened is July 19th last year, she went to Pittsburgh, and she entered a national competition. She actually entered in three different divisions. She won all three divisions. She won her national actually, she won two national championships and her pro status. And now here's what's the interesting part of that. She's 56 years old, and it's never been done.
That's amazing.
She beat a woman half her age. She beat a woman that was her daughter's age.
Good.
And the second part of that vision is how that would affect her business. And I was just at her brand-new gym that she opened up. She worked for somebody for a very long time. She just opened her own gym. It opened up a little over a week ago. So the two parts of her vision have become a reality because she was able to see them clearly and was willing to do the work she needed to support that in her mind to make it a reality and then take the logical steps in the physical world to make it happen.
Visualization, it's important. Scott, stay with us. We're going to come back with the final hour of phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And it's, Scott's website, of course, is ultimatevisionarymind.com, which is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Your phone calls are next, and we'll be back.